The next topics, Shakespearean comedy. Introduction. It is customary to apply the two antiquated terms, classical and romantic, to comedy as to many rather literary genre. Shakespeare comedies, at least most of them, are broadly speaking of the romantic kind, as opposed to the traditional classical kind, more or less exemplified by the comic play of Shakespeare's worthy contemporary and rival, Ben Jonson. The silent characteristics of classical comedy are its first, realism; second, satiric and didactic purpose; and third, its adherence to the classical rule in brackets, such as those of decorum, the separation of the species, and even the three unities, bracket close, as expounded the practiced by the writer and critics of antiquity. Contrivance, romantic comedy does not bother to be realistic, at least mechanically realistic, nor has it a very articulated didactic aim, nor even does it bother much about fettering the fertility of the imagination by subjecting it to rule. Romantic comedy generally has love for its theme, for what can be more romantic than love? New most of Shakespeare's comedies are the romantic type. There are a few, like the Comedy of Error, the Taming of the Shrew, and the Merry Wife of Windsor, which are not as romantic or as a purely romantic as the best of his comedies. As You Like It, The Merchant of Venice, Twelfth Night, Much Ado About Nothing, and A Midsummer Night Dream, all of which are the most characteristic of his comic genius. Let us now consider the most important feature of the Shakespearean comedy, the romantic world. Shakespeare's romantic comedy are all conceived in an imaginative setting, far away from the dull and dreary world of everyday life. Their characters are also different from us, as they are denizens of not our humdrum world, but the imaginary, colorful world of their own. Alaric's Nicole, well observed in the British drama, characters and the scene alike are viewed through a magic casement which transform reality. Some of the setting of Shakespeare comedy are Thebes, Arden, Illyria, Ephesus, and Venice. All these plays are bathed in the light of fancy and romantic splendor, which makes them recede still further from the dreary world of ours. Venice, for instance, is not the real historical Venice, but an ancient town of enhanced enchanting beauty, in which loans could be obtained by offering the flesh of one heart as security. What is true of setting is also true of the characters inhabiting them. They are too romantic and remote from the ordinary people of flesh and blood. They are somewhat unearthly. They go about making love, dancing, feasting, engaging themselves in table of wit with one another, singing on and making merry. Life for them is very often one long spring. They seem to be eating either bread, not in the sweet of their faces, but by some more pleasant but unknown method, the fever and the fret of life, which is abundantly obvious in Shakespeare's tragedy, is conspicuous by its absence in his comedies. Let us quote Thorndike here. There are only three industries in this land, that of Shakespearean comedy: making of love, making song, and making jests. And they make them all to perfection. It is well to interrupt the love making with a little joking, and the joking with a little music, and prancing some cakes and else, and then back to love again. Another critic quips that hardly anybody goes to business in these Shakespearean latitudes. Next, not altogether unrealistic. However romantic and fanciful may Shakespeare's comic world and its denizens be, it will be rash to conclude that they are altogether unrealistic, having nothing to do with the world of reality and the people living therein. Shakespearean comedy is not altogether escapist in nature. It is in its own oblique manner what Arnold accepted all good literature to be, a criticism of life. Are some very concrete links which join this world with the actual world. These links come into being when Shakespeare has a recourse of following methods. First, Shakespeare imports some feature of the real world into the world of his comedy. Take for instance the Forest of Arden, which provided the setting for As You Like It. The forest indeed is quite romantic and fanciful, but still it has certain features which render it the understandable part of our own concrete world. It is, a Carlton point out, no conventional Arcadia. Its inhabitants are not exempt for the penalty of Adam, winter, raw weather, the season difference, the icy fang, and churlish chiding of the winter's wind invade Arden as often as they invade his hemisphere of earth. Nor does manna fall to it from heaven. One may come by sufficient sustenance of flesh if one has the weapons and the impulse to make a breach in the conventionality and idyllic nature by native dwelling place. This is a clear instance of special pleading. A few similarities with the world of reality cannot adequately disprove the essential unrealistic and romantic nature of the Forest of Arden. Nevertheless, we can agree justly with this critic when he says that though the ultimate word of Shakespeare's comedy is romantic, poetic and imaginative, it is by no means unsubstantial and fantastic. Secondly, even when many of the characters in his comedies are romantic and remote from the world of reality, Shakespeare has the knack of adding to their world some very realistic and earthly characters who do not share their way to of life, attitude, sports and amorous fun. The addition of such characters exert a conserving influence upon the world of his comedy as a whole. Let us quote Alardis Nicole in this connection. There are contemporary figure, the contemporary fashion in Love's Labour Lost. Bottom and his companion mingle with the fairies. Sir Toby Blaze and Sir Andrew Aguecheek are companion of Viola and Olivia, Dogberry and Verges, the hero of Beatrice. This is the cardinal characteristic of Shakespearean romantic world, the union of realism and fantasy. Comedies of love. Most of Shakespeare's romantic comedies are built around the theme of love, which provided the chief motive force of starting, regulating and sustaining the machinery of the play. In this particular respect, romantic comedies strike a note of diametrical variance with classical comedy, in which love seldom play a major part. If love does come in, it comes in the form of just physical lust, giving rise to some complicated amorous intrigues. INTREGUES. There may be sex in classical comedy, but there is not much of love. intrigues of all sorts, including amorous one or alien, A-L-I-E-N, to the nature of romantic comedy, though they are quite popular with the comedy of the classical kind, especially the one based on the play of the Roman comedian Terence and Plautus. Love in all its manifestation and all in all its kind is indeed the soul of Shakespearean comedy, referring to As You Like It, Stopford broken remark. In this play, love lives in many forms. In Orlando and Rosalind, Celia and Oliver, Silvius and Fabio, Tuxon, the Andrews. We also see other form of love, the love of two girls from each other, of Adam from his master and his master for him, of Touchstone for Celia and Rosalind. Even a few touches are given to us of a daughter's affection for her father. But these kind of love, outside of the passion of youthful love for but side issue, due to the love of Shakespeare for a loving niche. Shakespeare's comedy are then mostly love comedies. He deals with love rather conventionally, in so far as a comedy with him generally end in a marriage. However, to use Shakespeare's own word, the course of true love did never run smooth. There are complications galore, G-A-L-O-R-E. The young lover have to undergo some sort of discipline before they reach the sweetest fruition of their armor. Ferdinand in The Tempest has to carry logs to wood for Miranda. Viola does not return Olivia, Rose love. Benedict and Beatrice are poles apart in the beginning, but in the end love make all obstacle evaporate in thin air. The pipes are brought and there is a marriage. The heroes and heroines in Shakespeare comedy is invariable young, and love making with them is a whole time profession. The spirit of youth find appropriate expression in amorous but not lustful activity. Naturally enough, there are plentiful song and dance to irradiate the youthful atmosphere of these comedies. The heroes and the heroines are youthful men and women before their marriage. One, the other hand, in most of Shakespeare tragedies, we find the protagonist past their prime and already married. Love, the leitmotif of Shakespearean comedy, is doubtlessly of the romantic kind, but Shakespeare seldom exalt it to be the platonic or Petrarchan level. Nor does it smack of carnality too much. It is not the entirely culpable sexual lust which figure in classical comedy, rather it has a certain elevated and elevating power. J. W. Lever in Elizabethan Love Sonnet observed, in Shakespearean comedy love is the mean of all human fulfillment. This orientation comes about without a spiritualizing of love's physical basic. Shakespeare's heroine are lacking in the sandly qualities of the Petrarchan mistress, far from rising their lover thought above best desire. Rosalind teaches or land how to woo the Juliet, reciprocate Romeo or dear so frankly that he promptly forgets the chaste attraction of his former lady. Sometimes we can hear the sadder note underlying the romantic sentiment. What is love? It's not hereafter. Present mirth has present laughter. What's to come is still unsure. And delay, there lies no plenty. Then comes kiss me, sweet and twenty. Youth's stuff will not endure. woman in Shakespearean comedy. Woman in Shakespearean comedy constitute its very soul. Shakespeare's tragedy and history play are dominated by their heroes. The ups and downs of those fortunate constitute what is mainly of interest in them. The tragic heroine simply pales into insignificance by the side of the grand heroes. But in his comedies, the reverse is true. A critic rather sweepingly but not altogether unjustly remarked that in Shakespeare's comedies, there are no heroes at all. There are only heroines. George Gordon observed all lecture on Shakespeare's comedies tends to become lecture on Shakespeare's women, for in the comedies they have to front of the stage. In Shakespeare's comedies, to quote the same critic, we meet with women of all rank and race, from the queen to the dairy maid, and from 50 to 15, from Cleopatra to Miranda. He is equally at home and has the whole range of femininity at his command. Shakespeare's comic heroines are much more sparkling than interesting than their male counterparts. We have the vivacious and the intelligent Portia, the witty witness of the constant Viola, and the charming Rosalind. Bassanio does not come to the level of Portia. Benedict Pell in wit beside Beatrice Vetrick, the Duke has no comparison with Viola, and Orlando with the charming Rosalind. Though all these heroines in their characters do not have the same pattern, at they have in common one important characteristic, their quintessential womanhood. This quality makes them look surprisingly modern. The woman in Restoration comedy and even the woman in the novel of the Victorian age appear to be dated, but Shakespeare comic heroine are dateless, though they are conceived much earlier. It is understandable why Shakespeare in his comedies should give such importance to women. As we have already said, these comedies are comedies of love, and love for a man is just a part of his life and life's activity. But for a woman, it is her whole life and its activity. Humor. A very attractive feature of Shakespeare's comedy is their humor. It is as it should be, because if comedy has a purpose, it is to arouse laughter at the foibles of follies of man with a genial and corrective aim. But the kind of humor we meet with in comedies of Shakespeare is entirely different from the kind we have in the classical comedy of Rome and its representation in Ben Jonson. The kind of humor to be found in the literary work is governed by the general attitude of the writer toward his fellow being, as also his moral standing. Ben Jonson's humor is sarcastic, satirical, and not a little cynical. He is impatient of the follies and human being, which he view from a superior moral level. He is always didactic and corrective. His aim is to less and hurt, not to tolerate and be assumed, he earnestly declared. I will strip the dashed follies of the time, naked as at their birth, and with a whip of steel, print wounding lasses in their iron ribs. Shakespeare, on the other hand, does not brandish such a whip of steel. His attitude toward his love being a acceptive and genial, right, rejective and cynical sometimes, as in the comedy of Error. He does fall at the manner of his time, but such a job is essential alien to his nature. He delights and does not teach. Dawden in the mind and the art of Shakespeare observed, the genial laughter and Shakespeare at human absurdity is free from even an amiable cynicism, which gives to the humor of Jane Austen a certain quiet flavor. It is like the play of summer lighting, which hurts no living creature, but surprising, illuminates and charms. Moreover, Shakespeare's comic humor is not invariably of the same kind or intensity. It is multifaceted, just as characterized by the same quality of geniality, the light-heartedness, which issues not from adolescent flippancy, but the maturest wisdom and insight into at least one aspect of human life. The topic Shakespearean comedy is over.